Welcome to the Lindsay Hadley Podcast Show. I'm coming to you from the North Shore of Oahu, where weekly I interview some of the world's most inspiring people from business, philanthropy, and entertainment. I love collecting humans, and these are some of my favorites I've found along the way. This podcast is brought to us by Capita Financial Network.
Do you need help with the next steps of your financial plan? Think Capita. Capita is a financial network built around you. They have a team of financial advisors, CPAs, estate attorneys, Medicare providers, and Social Security experts to help you accomplish your financial goals. Call or schedule a complimentary consultation at 801-566-5058 or visit their website at capitafinancialnetwork.com. You can also check out their financial education podcast, The Financial Call, available on Apple, Google, Spotify, and YouTube.
Hi, welcome to the Lindsay Hadley Podcast Show. Today, I'm able to interview one of my personal heroes and dear friends, Dan Cathy. Dan is best known for his waffle fries and addictive chicken. As the former CEO and current chairman of Chick-fil-A, America's favorite chicken, and also Every Cow in America's favorite restaurant. We're so grateful to have Dan on. Dan is an absolute luminary in social impact, and that's what we're going to be talking about most today, because we know him for his family's successful founding of this American franchise that is a household name. But more than anything, what his family has done, and Dan shares the deep passion for giving back, starting out in Atlanta, Georgia, where he's originally from. He and his family have been staple leaders in making sure that everybody has a seat at the table. And I'm so excited for us to share a little bit about your journey and your heart. Dan, thanks for coming on the show.
Well, thank you, Ms. Lindsay. Honored to be with you. And some of my early memories of being out in the Salt Lake City area is going to Cinderella City, I believe. That's probably not even on your radar screen. But that was a shopping mall in days gone past. And as Chick-fil-A expanded out that way in the early 80s, mid-80s maybe, we opened in shopping malls out there. Of course, we've got freestanding restaurants now all over Utah and the Rocky Mountain areas, but it's fun to see you and be with you today, and thank you for your passion to learn and grow and develop and make sure that we're paying it forward to the next generation, as prior generations did for us.
Oh, Dan, it's amazing. So, yeah, that mall doesn't exist anymore that I'm aware of, but I love that you're everywhere available to us. It's a great gift to me as a mom of three hungry boys. So I'm thrilled to talk today a little bit about a couple things. You know, we both share a faith and believing in Jesus as like this perfect embodiment of love. And something that is really common in my community here in Utah is that businesses shut down on Sundays. And I just wanted to really quick, as a Chick-fil-A kind of throwback with your day-to-day operations there, maybe you can share a little bit why your family's decision to actually shut down on Sundays and also how that expression of your faith and how that's played out in business. Because I think there's a lot of business listeners to our podcast who probably face the same questions about, you know, how do I reconcile some of these things that maybe my faith tradition suggests, and then how that actually applies in reality. And I think it's fun to hear your thoughts about that, if you don't mind answering that little question.
Yeah. Well, we were created, obviously, as you know, in God's image, and we were created to have a faith spirituality component of our life, just like, you know, we have a mental, emotional, you know, physical part of our life and so forth. But there's also a spiritual part of our life. And that spiritual part, whether we nurture it, develop it or not, is still there. You know, whether or not we take care of our bodies or not, it's still a body and we still live with the consequences. So if we nurture all areas of our life, this is my conviction, then we begin to live the life that I think God destined us to live. This full of meaning and purpose and significance. And we're really remodeling the kind of well-balanced life that we need to model for the next generation. So from that standpoint, it's my father, Truett Cathy, who started Chick-fil-A. He actually started in the restaurant business when he describes it, working with his mom in the kitchen in the west side of Atlanta. She operated a boarding house in order to provide as the breadwinner for the family. And she would have my dad working at her side there, shucking corn and shelling peas and washing dirty dishes. That's how Dad would always say it. And it was there at the time that he made a commitment that if he ever got in the restaurant business, which I don't even think was on his radar screen really at the time, but I remember him recalling that when he was just a teen, washing dirty dishes on Sunday afternoon was not a very enjoyable thing when all your buddies are outside having a good time, playing and so forth. So I think it points out the fact that decisions and experiences that we have very early in their life can have a lasting influence in our life, hopefully to the good. But when he opened up his little family restaurant in 1946, they opened up on a Tuesday, I believe it was the 23rd of May, 1946. And it was a 24-hour day business with he and his brother. And so all day on Tuesday, all night, Tuesday night, Wednesday night, Thursday, all day Friday. And I think they made the decision supposedly on a Friday or Saturday morning that looking at each other, we're going to be open up on Sunday. So they decided that they were literally just exhausted. They were worn out. It really, as Dad would said it, it was not so much from a spiritual conviction standpoint so much as it was they were worn out. And also the fact that Sunday was not a big trading day back in the 1940s. We were closed on that first Sunday, and we've been closed ever since. Now, since then, as we began to expand, outside the Atlanta area, we began to expand in shopping malls and freestanding restaurants, obviously, it became more of a real signature for us that we were closed on Sunday. And I like to tell people that our food tastes better on Monday because we're closed on Sunday. And if you believe what Ben Franklin said, he said, the handshake of the host affects the taste of the roast. So if that handshake is warm and gracious and genuine, and it's a rested handshake, so that when we take care of our guests, we're not all strung out. We've got energy. We've got zip. We took the day off. If people want to worship if they so choose, obviously to be with their family, we hope they would make those good decisions about how they use their time away. But I do think that our drive-through runs faster. Our smiles are genuine. We say my pleasure. I think we really mean it because we've had time off. Accountants sometimes ask, well, have you ever calculated how much money you lose because you're closed on Sunday? I said, well, not really. We really think about how much more business that we do because our business is something that runs, faster, better because we take that day off. So I think it's a wise, God's laws were intended for our good. It's intended for our health. It's intended so that we could thrive and prosper. And so this is just one of a hope of a lot of biblical principles that were intended for us as business people to apply in our life. And when we apply integrity, when we apply compassion, when we apply understanding, obviously with our customers, but when we have internal service quality, in terms of being respectful based on our faith, based on biblical principles that we try to apply, it's incredible how it works in the marketplace and you can thrive.
Oh, that's so great. I just love your passion of how business principles and biblical principles actually are very complementary in how they have this beautiful synergy. So that's amazing. So thanks for answering that question, Dan, because I know that's something I've often admired. Like you said, it's a signature.
Lindsay, I would encourage those that are watching, listening to this podcast, that Solomon, who was, I like to describe him as the Warren Buffett of his day, he owned the cattle on a thousand hills, so to speak, but he was the wisest man that ever lived. And he said, Proverbs 3:5-6, he says, trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. I mean, this is the smartest guy that ever lived. And he says, even I can't figure all this out. But he goes on in verse 6, he says, but in all your ways, while you're managing people's capital, while you're selling chicken sandwiches, all the professions that we might have represented on this conversation today, but in all your ways, if you'll just acknowledge him, then he'll direct our paths. And so I would encourage, business people, leaders that are out there, our Congress wisely embraced the national motto, In God We Trust, a motto that we woefully underutilized in public conversations. But there's a wonderful promise that if we trust with him with all our heart, if we'll acknowledge him, then he'll direct our path. So it's not just the application of biblical principles, but looking for opportunities to kind of connect the dots for people. This isn't just because it's convenient or because it's our family heritage or because this is kind of the normal way, but we're doing it because there's a biblical principle that's at play here. And that's, of course, how we need to be teaching our children as well.
That's so beautiful. What I love about you, Dan, is I watched you. I had the privilege of coming out to your incredible event in Atlanta, which I'd love to segue into, called the Beloved Concert. And you have 2,000 people from the community, both, you know, captains of industry, famous people, you know, the brightest and most shiniest of achievers. And then you have everyday people, grassroots people that are doing the work. You had employees of Chick-fil-A. I saw how you delighted in them the same way. I could tell you didn't treat anybody as any respect as a person. In fact, one thing I deeply admired about you is you also ran a tight ship. We were doing a host. You were hosting like a VIP cohort around the city and showing your favorite incredible organizations that are making a difference for economic mobility on the ground in Atlanta. And you were like, come on, let's go. And it didn't matter if it was a billionaire benefactor donor or a CEO of some major corporation. You treated them like they were, you know, staff. And we had to get everywhere. And I thought, this guy is the world's best camp director. I wish I had gone to summer camp with Dan Cathy. And then, ironically, for breakfast, you actually played the bugle. Is that right? The trumpet. That's right. You played the trumpet. And I was like, okay, you're like my spirit animal. But, you know, I think because you actually do kind of see people as people, it obviously begs of you and your life to pour into people that have less than others. But tell us a little bit about the Beloved, you know, concert, how this all got started, your why behind this amazing event and initiative.
Sure. Thank you. I think one of the themes that I've tried to adapt into the culture of my life is a sense of curiosity and, you know, being ready for unexpected moments that might be inspiring moments, teachable moments. And that was the case one Sunday night years ago when I was watching 60 Minutes on CBS, and they had a report about the Robin Hood event. It wasn't just the Robin Hood event, which was a big multi-million-dollar fundraiser for social organizations in Manhattan. But it was also about the story of Paul Tudor Jones, who is a hedge fund operator. You being in financial services would have to Google up the name Paul Tudor Jones. I had the privilege of meeting him a couple of times, but they wanted to capture the story of here's a very successful person, but someplace along the line, he felt like he wanted to reinvest back in his own local community. And so many safety net organizations, as I like to call them, the needs that our society and culture go far beyond, you know, what we can needs that we can meet in organized municipalities or county government or elected officials, certainly state or federal. And so he put together an event called the Robin Hood event, and this is the story that was captured in CBS in 60 Minutes. And I was so enamored with that, I said, man, we need to do something like this in Atlanta. And so the next year, we took a delegation from Atlanta to visit the Robin Hood event. In fact, we saw it a couple of years annually just to learn as much as we possibly could. And then we came back. We asked them, would you like to help us? And so they were very gracious to help us learn as much as we possibly could on how do you orchestrate and stage an event that, you know, yes, it does raise money for local civic organizations, and you can bundle up a party that's much bigger than any one of these organizations could do by themselves, and you could make it have star entertainment, which we had over the 3 years that we've had it thus far here in Atlanta, with Bruno Mars and Usher, and the pianist John Legend that was with us this past year. No one organization would be able to host a party quite like the one you and your friends were able to see in Atlanta. But we came back, staged it up. One thing that you pointed out that was unique about ours is that we wanted the beneficiaries of the funds that we had raised to actually be included in the guest list rather than being excluded. We wanted them to enjoy the entertainment, wanted them to enjoy the interaction with folks that they needed to meet, and frankly, the Buckhead crowd, if you would, they needed to meet the crowd that was in Bankhead, just to play off that alliteration of the B word. But there's a huge span in life expectancy, tragically, between there's literally a 15-year life expectancy difference if you live in Bankhead, a desert for vegetables and fresh fruit and on and on and on, versus the incredible, life expectancy and the lifestyle of safety, education, on and on and on, of Buckhead. So we were able to resolve this by putting everybody in casual attire, no fancy sports coats, just casual attire. In fact, I even had a long sleeve T-shirt on at the first event that we had. And then we didn't have round tables, we had long tables, so that we were interacting with the recipients of this fund, the local communities that we were serving, were interacting together, making introductions, and in a way, it was a little bit of heaven on earth, the nights that we've done this, where we better go ahead and get used to, being with one another and enjoying one another and being curious and asking questions about what's going on in your life and what excites you? What are your passions? What are your disappointments? And we had those kind of conversations going on. So I think it's a real model of what other communities can do as well from many perspectives.
Oh, that's so exciting, because we're doing it here in Salt Lake City. In fact, Capita Financial Network, which is the sponsor of this podcast and the company I so am so blessed to work for, we're going to be hosting on July 1st an event, and we're going to have an activation, which is called The Same House. So your event in Atlanta was called Beloved Concert, and it came from Martin Luther's. Maybe you can talk a little about the Beloved name, and then why now you're taking this locally felt impact, taking it national with an umbrella like the brand The Same House. Maybe you can share a little bit about that.
Surely. And of course, we're very proud that Martin Luther King Jr. was Atlanta native. And again, he used his spirituality. It was a huge driving force that brought him to realize that he needed to step up and provide leadership on racial reconciliation that obviously was sorely needed in our society. And he often would use the term the beloved community, where everyone cared for one another, somewhat like I described earlier, where we're looking after, one another, taking care of one another. And so we, in his honor, named this event our first couple of years the Beloved Benefit, actually. It felt like a concert, but it was intended to be a benefit for about six or eight carefully curated and selected beneficiaries, social organizations that we felt good about, that we could endorse, that were the beneficiaries of the really hundreds of thousands and several million dollars over the course of our first three events that we're able to raise. So I think we should be inspired by, these people that we stand on their shoulders. And, as we move forward with new ideas, we should take, some of the heritage of these ideas. And I'm so glad we're able to do that with not only Blood House and Blood Benefit, but also The Same House has a similar heritage. That was inspired by one of our actual speakers the first year with John Lewis, Representative John Lewis, a very famed representative in the U.S. Congress from our Atlanta area, who literally marched on the streets with Martin Luther King, with Andrew Young, and other civil rights leaders in the 50s and 60s. And so he, in his very deep, rich voice, he's on stage with Steve Harvey, who was the host that first year. He says, we all live in the same house, the house of Atlanta, Georgia. And we all knew that was a moment. Everyone there, I think, knew that we were in a very special moment. And we, of course, know that within 12 months, he passed away. But those words still echo in our mind and our heart and really resonate with the passion that we really are, if we think about it, that we really are in the same house. So we ought to take care of the house. We should be looking after one another. If somebody's hurting, in the kitchen, then let's run for the bedroom and let's help them out. We're all in the same house together. And we all are safety needs, our fulfillment needs are all destined because of the fact that we really do live in the same house. So let's act like that.
Oh, I love that.
And take care of one another.
I love it. And so the same house is now this national brand that is going to be taken to other cities. And we're so excited, Salt Lake City, to have attended, and we pledged funding commitment locally. So these benefactors, as they get involved or they hear what we're doing, you know, from what I understand, and I've been so honored that you guys have had me join as an advisory board member to this initiative because I believe in it so much. It reminds me a lot of a local domestic version of what we built at Global Citizen, where we were able to get top-down commitments from governments and corporations and high net worth people for ending yes. extreme poverty under the umbrella of the Sustainable Development Goals of the United Nations. And we were able to get, like you said, big stars, make a big party, make a big amplifying sizzle splash pan moment. But what really matters are the people on the ground who do the work day in, day out to make lives better. And we have those in Salt Lake City. We have incredible organizations that are helping children in foster care, helping avoid, you know, recidivism for people coming out of prison, helping refugee resettlement. Utah has one of the greatest per capita places for refugee resettlement in the nation. We're working on issues around women, gender equality for women, particularly in the face of business. There's a massive economic disparity in Utah. I think we're number 50 out of the 50 United States for gender equality issues. So there's a lot of places that we're doing great work here. Tell us a little bit about some of the organizations in Atlanta that are kind of your pet favorites. I saw a few of them and they were stunning, doing amazing work, like City Refuge. I'd love for you to share a little bit, you know, what it is about an organization that lights your heart up and makes you want to give and get behind them.
Yeah, well, thank you. So when we think about how we're going to steward God's resources, that's the starting point. That, you know, before we start talking about organizations, let's have a real clear understanding that we don't take any of this with us. If we're able to accumulate resources, then we are the stewards of those resources, and we should ask for a lot of wisdom so that we can be good stewards. Jesus said a lot about, you know, how we take care of the little things will determine how we'll later take care of the big things. From that standpoint, I think every expenditure we make really is a spiritual decision about being very responsible for how we steward money, how our own spending levels on ourselves and things we do and the things we buy. And again, that has to be generated, I think, within the family, certainly between a husband and a wife, but also is a huge responsibility to teach financial stewardship principles to our children as well, to engage them on how is mommy and daddy, you know, making decisions
yeah.
about who we're going to give money to. What needs do our children see out there where we can help them learn the habit of generosity, the process of generosity? So it's a cultural, you know, family tradition that's very important for any society and culture to perpetuate. So I have been involved in different ministries, social organizations, where they themselves were maybe not good stewards of what had been entrusted. Sometimes even governance and management of those organizations has to be looked at. I got involved in some homeless ministries, frankly, in Atlanta, two of them, one right after the other. And it was not a good experience at all for me. And I was recommending them to other people that I knew that wanted to invest in addressing some of the homeless issues that we face in Atlanta, as every community faces. And my name and reputation was associated with those organizations that I endorsed. And so it was, at times, it was even embarrassing to me, you know, that I had endorsed these organizations when I should not have. That being said, let's look at, how do you make good decisions? Pray for God for wisdom. I always like to look at the organizational structure. What is the board of directors or the trustees? Who's on that board? Do I know somebody on that board? Would I feel good about being associated, you know, with this organization and the work that they're doing and the efficiency that they have, that they're not just taking the funds and burning it all in overhead, but there's a real strong correlation between the reception or the receipt of funds and that is being efficiently given out. Specifically in Atlanta, other than my own local church, that are involved in a couple of organizations I'll just quickly mention. One is called A Better Way. This was started by a gentleman who found himself in solitary confinement. He'd had a life of crime that had been modeled for him actually by his mother. And so he was in an incredibly spiraling, destructive lifestyle that ended up in solitary confinement when a warden handed him a Bible. And that Bible and God's working in his life was a dramatic turnaround in his life. And so when he came out of prison, he wanted to help other young men. It's a men's-focused ministry that he has, helping them that are involved in substance abuse and other life addiction issues. And again, it's called A Better Way. And he's got about six or seven different businesses, little mom-and-pop businesses, where he's teaching entrepreneurial skills to these men and how to have a good work ethic. They get up at 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning, very disciplined, almost a militaristic lifestyle pattern, because many of these did not have a disciplined home life and disciplined life skills. But they've got over 110 men that's grown into over the last 25 years. And I'm just so proud of these young men. I look forward to being around them. I wear their Better Way t-shirts, purple t-shirts from time to time. I like being able to give them encouragement because they really want it and need it. Another one I'll quickly mention is called City of Refuge in Atlanta. Started by a gentleman, Bruce Deal, and I think we met Bruce Deal when you were with us, Lindsay, in Atlanta. And again, they've been operating there for 25 plus years. They're a total end-to-end resource for those that find themselves, you know, in destitute living conditions, and helping them with job skills, helping them with medical issues, helping them with personal documentation, and on and on. And again, I found them to be really a good steward of God's resources. So I enjoy being able to channel resources into those two. There's many others. I think the point is that we should be take this very seriously. I had a very well-known NFL person who's recently moved to Atlanta who called me this past Saturday and said, "Hey, I know you're involved in Christian ministries in Atlanta. Would you guide me to the ones that you think are responsibly stewarding God's funds?" So it's a topic to be taken very seriously.
I love that. I love that you can be a lampstand to these people because you've spent the time and energy and you have such a talented team. I mean, Brendan and Rodney that run the same house, I mean, in all of your team nationally working on this project, they're just 10 out of 10 in capacity and in character. So I think it's awesome that you can lead in that way. So Dan, you know, you're pioneering some new ideas and concepts, and you're out kind of, you just got that entrepreneurial bug in you that it's in your DNA clearly from your dad. Can you share with us a little bit about what you're doing in film? Because I'm a budding filmmaker. I've started executive producing films, you know, and now I have a film fund that we've just launched. It'll be the first that I can hear of that at scale is trying to do a 501c3 tax exempt nonprofit that will be a film fund for feature films. Since before I was born, people have been leveraging philanthropic dollars to make documentaries, which are impactful and educational and can shed a light on important issues and change the way we think about things.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you. You're exactly right. I just came in from a hard hat construction tour where we're building more stages and more areas. And I'm excited about what you're doing, Lindsay. I think you're spot on. I think you're in a very strategic, you got your head screwed on right in terms of investing your time and the one and only life that we're going to live. Let's invest it in the areas that are most strategically influential on society and culture. The art of storytelling, of course, has been around since man was drawing pictures of animals, wild animals, on the cave walls. And there was this drama of storytelling. And, you know, there's a story of life that we're a part of and God's story from that standpoint. And as you said, the most effective communicators in society and culture are wonderful at telling stories. Some of them are really good at telling jokes and so forth as well. But as we think about our leadership skills, we should also be thinking about curating and developing our ability to tell a good story, whether it's fiction or even nonfiction. If it's a nonfiction documentary kind of story, the drama, the challenge, the story arc, and there are patterns, as you know, of classical storytelling, and it's good for leaders to learn that. But as you may know, we passed some tax incentives in Georgia to attract this storytelling entertainment industry to Georgia. And the epicenter, of course, for generations has been in California and Burbank, LA area. And so we've been successful in bringing much of that storytelling industry, particularly feature film, coming to Georgia. And so we've built a studio operation here. The big play for me, however, in that context, even though I'm not writing scripts, I'm not casting the characters, editing and putting music behind it, I'm not doing all the distribution nor the funding of any of that, but I am setting the stage so that the great storytellers of our generation can inspire the world. And we have incredible cast of directors and writers, but also a remarkable cast of actors that we're able to host here. So in this stage of my life, beyond just cars going through a Chick-fil-A drive-thru, you know, I find that God has, you know, led me and brought me to a place in a whole other industry where kindness and respectfulness and second law service applies in the entertainment industry. And people are just as responsive to kindness in this industry as they seem to be at a Chick-fil-A restaurant.
I love it.
It's a lot of fun.
What a gift, because, you know, Hollywood throws some sharp elbows. I mean, it's a high contact sport. You're being very humble because you're just talking like surface about what you've built at Trillis, but it's the largest movie studio, I believe, in the world now. Is that right? Bigger than any Hollywood studio?
At least in the U.S. It rivals one that's in China.
Oh, man.
But it's not our goal to have the most square footage of conditioned space for sound stages. It just turned out to be that way because we've got so much production going on. Thank goodness the writer's strike and the actor strike that went on for 9 horrific months during 2023. That was a headline for many people, but it was the bottom line for us here in terms of the impact that it had on us. But we were able to survive that. We're repopulating our stages literally as we speak. We're not quite back up to the levels that we were before the strike of May of 2023, but there was a big backlog of demand because we were swimming through content, not only nationally, but internet as well. So there's a big backlog of talent, and we've got to refill that pipeline. So it's going strong. But to your point earlier, we need to read content and stories and put our mind around things that are going to help us make better choices and decisions and have better attitudes. I love the talking about stories. I love the story of an Indian who described his life in that there's two dogs fighting inside. Yeah, and he feels them. These two dogs fighting, and he said the one he feeds most often is the one that wins most.
Yeah.
And so we all have that, you know, the good and the bad. There's a spiritual war going on for our very souls ourselves. And we've got to make sure that we feed our mind and feed our soul with God's word and do things that nurtures the spiritual health of our bodies.
Oh, I love what you're saying. It's so unbelievably true. It's like, I believe it, but something inside me is when I listen to you, it's like, believe that even more so, you know, like just lean into it more, because sometimes we can be unconscious about what we consume, what we talk about, who we spend time with. We can just kind of be going through the motions. So I love that fortifying in
Lindsay,
in steel.
If your life's like mine, the default, if we're not regularly reading God's word, if we're not regularly nurturing our spirits with good spiritual habits of prayer, worshiping regularly, giving, tithing, and on, the default is going to take us off course. The default is not going to naturally take us on the course that we need to stay on. So it takes a disciplined life to enjoy the fruits of a nurtured spiritual life. And I hope that all of us as husbands, as fathers, moms, wives, business leaders, elected officials, on and on, that again, going back to our national motto, the God we trust, that motto lived out personally works.
Amazing. Like, So this fund that I've launched is called the Harbor Fund. And one of the film projects in it, I'm so excited about it. It's got some major A-list players in it and some storytelling, but it tells the story of Hershey, the founder of Hershey Chocolate, Milton Hershey. And this journey of the entrepreneurial hero's journey you talked about makes for good storytelling. But in the end, most people don't realize this. This is a true story, but Hershey, him and his wife could never, Milton Hershey, they could never have children. His wife fell sick. Her name was Catherine. She went by Kitty. And so she volunteered her time in Pennsylvania, in Hershey, Pennsylvania, the little community they created as a result of the dynasty they built. And she volunteered in an orphanage. And when she passed away young, he was so devastated. But the only place he found, you know, kind of solace or healing was when he poured himself into these vulnerable orphan children. And so when he died, he left all of his founding shares, all of his money from the Hershey founding, shares and equity. He left it to this orphanage that has now become the Hershey Foundation that now helps vulnerable children all around the world. I never knew that. I've been eating Hershey chocolate all my life in various forms and every Halloween. And, you know, and I never realized that it has this incredible story behind it of a true love story about a husband and wife, but a love story about mankind. And, you know, I love that. I feel like you're just like the Care Bear stare, Dan. Everything about you is a love story. And I'm just so grateful to know you as a friend. And I consider you someone I really do admire and genuinely from the bottom of my heart, not because of the financial success per se, although that came at a great cost, an incredible sacrifice and incredible capacity as a professional. But really, I what I admire most about you are the things, the way you treated people getting your coffee and the way you engage with people and you make yourself so accessible. Like, I can tell that you probably had a lot of invitations in the last couple decades to maybe think you're better than others because of how the world rewards some of the incredible outcomes you've had. But I can tell you haven't bought that invitation. And I find that very, very respectable. And I adore you for it. So thank you so much, Dan, for coming on this show. I'm so grateful to know you and be supportive and a partner in your great work and making the world a better place. Really appreciate you, my friend.
Yeah, thank you. It's an honor to be with you as well. And I hope that you'll continue to eat more chicken, as the cow's sake.
I will, I promise. I'll go grab some today. All right, my man. Thank you again. Thanks for coming on the show.
Do you need help with the next steps for your financial plan? Think Capita. Capita is a financial network built around you. They have a team of financial advisors, CPAs, estate attorneys, Medicare providers, and Social Security experts to help you accomplish your financial goals. Call to schedule a complimentary consultation at 801-566-5058 or visit their website at www.capitafinancialnetwork.com. You can also check out their financial education podcast, The Financial Call, available on Apple, Google, Spotify, and YouTube.